Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we are now in, what, day four or day five of this thing, and I have taken to just shooting my laundry into my laundry basket for 15 minutes, stretches of 15 minutes on end.
Just to get some basketball reps in?
Anything. Anything whatsoever. I even set, like at one point I said, Avery really enjoys this. I'll set up her bouncer in front of me and just pass her the ball. Now she can't catch, so it winds up being just like a really soft bounce off the forehead. Just working on the soccer skills a little bit. I'm going insane. I'm going insane. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, man. I'm trying to, take care of me and mine. These are, kind of uncharted waters. And so just, trying to figure out what all of this means, trying to protect the people that I care about. So I think I'm a little more in, Papa Bear mode for my, not quite ready to move on to basketball yet, but we will. And this recording, this is actually helpful for me to kind of return a little bit of sense of normalcy in a world that's probably not going to be normal for a while.
Yeah, the latest news was the NBA sent out a memo reportedly to teams saying to prepare for a 3-month hiatus. So by day, like, well, honestly, I'm talking about day five and I'm throwing a ball at my daughter's forehead. But by day 50 or 60, we might really be scraping the bottom of the barrel here for content. But I think one thing you and I were talking about, it's just going to give us an opportunity about just talking. And I think people would get a kick out of just talking about stuff that they're doing to pass the time, movies that they're into. I just started watching Billions, and I've decided that you kind of sort of remind me of Paul Giamatti, like just in terms of vibe.
Oh, so, yeah? I've gotten that a couple times, yeah.
Yeah? Good. I'm not alone. Have you picked up on Paul Giamatti? Like, he just... His go-to acting thing is repeating the line that gets said to him.
I have not. No, I don't think I've seen a ton of Paul Giamatti movie. Like, I've seen him in a few movies, but I'm not all that well versed in his acting.
Yeah, it's like if I was Paul Giamatti right now, I'd be like, not well versed in my acting. Not well versed in my acting.
Huh. Ah, got it.
It's his go-to line. Once you hear it once, you can't unhear it. Today's show, like I said, though, we are going to kind of update you guys on the situation. The Lakers are reportedly figuring out some of the ways, the ins and outs of how they're going to handle this hiatus. They from there, though, after the first segment of getting through that, we're going to introduce this bracket that I came up with, or we came up with, to get us through at least a chunk of this period. Well, we're going to put our favorite Lakers teams up against each other in just like a friendly competition that allows us to talk about our favorite Lakers teams. So we'll formally introduce that in the second segment and then allow that to carry us over to what are our favorite Lakers seasons of all time. And that'll carry us through the rest of the show. So the latest Lakers-specific news was basically how they're handling this, right? They still aren't allowed to hold team practices or even group workouts. The players are expected to check in every day. They're allowed to do some traveling. They're allowed to go out of state. But for the most part, it's just, hey, guys, please be smart about this. Please, get some work in, I would hope, to stay sharp for this year. And look, a 90-day break seems to risk the season in and of itself. But given what's at stake here for the Lakers, they were on their way, especially the last we saw of the Lakers with wins against Milwaukee and the Clippers. It seemed like they were marching towards a potential championship year. So it makes it all the more important that the guys take care of themselves over this break. Just in case the season comes back, they might be able to hit the ground running again. What are the chances you think of that?
So if the season does eventually resume, I think the Lakers are fairly well positioned to do well within that, because this is all about leadership, right? This mm-hmm. is something that navigating unusual circumstances is how well can people come together. And I think that the nature of this team, led by LeBron especially, is that they were able to do that very quickly at the beginning of the season. They've experienced a ton of adversity on and off the court that probably plays into that. And I just think that there are strong leaders in terms of, and this goes all the way up to Jeanne Buss, right? In terms of people who understand human dynamics and what's important. And they'd built a very familial atmosphere with the Lakers. You know, we criticize them for that, but there's also a positive aspect to it, in which I think really unprecedented circumstances, I think that the teams that are closer together as people will thrive as they come out of this. But honestly, man, any prognostication, like I'm just guessing, man, we're in uncharted waters here.
Yeah, it's really impossible to try to even start to figure out what this might look like when they come back. You just never know. I mean, you say it's about leadership, but even that, it's hard to lead when you don't have any access to the people you're supposedly leading.
Sure. Right? I mean, yes, but there are ways to communicate, and I'm sure the guys are in touch with each other, right? Whether it's over text and Skype, and just like, what are we working on? You know, this is they can coordinate at the very least.
Yeah, sending a lot of carrier pigeons and, you know, some ravens, a la Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. We're talking as if like no form of communication exists, I guess. I'm talking about it as if like that while we were recording the show over Skype. So I guess that's my bad. all right, so that'll do it for the latest about the Lakers. Look, the updates are going to start to kind of thin out a little bit because there just isn't much to report right now. Everybody is just kind of in this holding pattern while we, as not just a nation, but as an entire human race, try to figure out how to sort out the coronavirus. And, you know, until we start to get any kind of clarity in that, then we might start to see a little bit more clearly what's going on with stuff on the peripheries of our society that exist, because our main priority was taken care of, and that main priority being, hey, let's all be as safe as possible on this. And again, I keep on saying this, I don't like to get too political. For some reason, it's become a political statement to not abide common sense laws when the CDC tells us, hey, don't gather in large gatherings, let's not do this and not do that. It's become somehow a political statement to ignore the CDC in that. Can we please just be a little smarter about this so that, you know, we can more quickly figure out what's going on here and try to identify the problem and then start to fix it? But so long as we all continue to gather that way, none of this has a chance of getting fixed, because that's just going to continue to further the spread of the virus. So I'll step off my soapbox, though. Send us into the break, and we'll pay a couple bills. When we come back, we'll talk about this bracket, this tournament, our own March Madness that we're going to launch here probably in the next few days here in a bit. So the name on this is still pending. I'm not even sure we'll ever really formally give it a name. But what we're going to do is we're going to set up a bracket. Right now we have 15 teams. I asked the question out there on Twitter. 15 teams that people have nominated and given multiple votes for in some cases. So we're going to, I'm going to seed the bracket based on, you know, number of times that a team got a vote. Our own obviously super scientific method of which teams did we like more. And we'll fill in the gap here with a couple teams. Right now we're at 15. We could get up to 16. We'll see where I actually want this bracket to wind up. Pete, are you kind of curious as to like where the votes have come in on this?
I am. I'm curious to see who's, you know, who the top seeds are.
All right. So right now, as it stands, the two teams that got the most votes were the 2010 Lakers, the 09-10 Lakers. for I would imagine fairly obvious reasons, right? They beat the Celtics in Game 7, Kobe's second championship by himself. So I could see that. The 0-1 Lakers come in. They have the same number of votes as the 2010 Lakers. The 0-1 Lakers, though, which kind of surprised me a little bit. Does that surprise you at all? I don't even know why it surprises me, but it did.
Yeah, I thought they'd be number one. That team. Really? I actually think we probably need to establish some ground rules, like from comparing cross eras and mm-hmm. things like that, in terms of how we, how we proceed with the evaluating it, right? Because, like, yeah, in 2001, we didn't have, like, you know, the spacing that we have in today's game. There are a lot of things that are different about that game versus, you can go back to the 72 Lakers and the Showtime Lakers. So to try to kind of normalize it across the board, but of all, like, especially if we're doing like who wins, like,
I don't even know if I want to do who wins.
Yeah. Explain that. Like, what is kind of the, how we're judging this?
I think it would be a combination of, and I guess I should have done a little bit more of figuring this out before I hopped on the air to talk about it. But I want to make it some combination of, you know, the likability of a team, stuff that was going on around it, the actual caliber of the team, obviously, which, like you say, is really hard to figure out when you go era by era. Like, it's been 20 years basically since the three-peat. It's been 20 years. So, like, the game has completely changed since then. It's been 35-ish years since the Showtime Lakers. I'm not going to go any further back than the Showtime Lakers, though, because you're talking about a completely, you know, you're talking about an audience, right? Really, who didn't
sure.
really see
that, didn't experience it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I'd like to talk about the likability, the experience of watching them, how fun a team were they. That's, you know, you don't even have to win a championship. Like, one of my favorite seasons was the 07-08 year.
Right. I was going to say, yep.
Which, like, you know, when you consider the roller coaster that season was, you know, that's going to rank fairly high on my own personal rankings. So, I don't know. I'll probably chart down some kind of a grading system. I don't know if I want to make it so formal. I don't want this to be an objective list. I want this to be subjective. I want us to just, it's just going to give us an opportunity to look back and talk about our favorite Lakers teams. Like, that's really all this is. Because, like you say, you know, you and I were texting back and forth. The last thing I want this to become is, you know, oh, well, this team wasn't even that good because they couldn't contend with
Shaq. Pitting Lakers teams against each other.
Right? Like, I just want to get together and, you know, we'll have some basically informal bracket where, you know, technically there's a winner, but mostly we just want to get together and talk about these teams, because what the hell else are we going to do for the next 3 months?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly. That sounds fun to me.
So, that's basically the idea behind it. Like I said, I'm still kind of charting out the best direction to take this. I'm going to allow that, though, to segue. I've already talked about 07-08 being one of my favorite seasons. What's your absolute favorite Lakers season to date?
Woo. So it's easy to look at these seasons as kind of the end result.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, did they win the championship? How, like, for me, it's more like there were some title teams, like, especially like the, like the 02 Lakers, they fought all the time. Like, they were not fun for most of the year. Like, they were really good and they won the title and we squeaked by Sacramento. But, like, the experience from beginning to end, I mean, the end was amazing, but, like, the whole year was not great, right? Like,
can it wasn't, I actually say the end, not that amazing, really. Because, like,
fair enough.
It was a relief more than it was some grand celebration. It was like, thank God we won. Given everything that this team is putting us through, they better fucking win a title.
Right? Yeah, that's true.
That's how I walked away from that season.
That's true. In terms of favorite, gosh, this is such a hard question because there's, like, different types of fun. There's, like, how much fun you have is also really determined by expectations.
Absolutely.
So two of my favorite all-time teams are that 08 team that you were talking about, and then the 95 Lakers, right? And in mm-hmm. both instances, they were a lot better than we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season, Mm-hmm. And so when you've got a team that you don't expect to do much, and like, oh crap, they're like the 08 season started with Kobe demanding a trade and saying he'd rather play on Pluto.
Yep.
And it ended in the NBA finals. We lost to the Celtics, unfortunately, but like the whole ride of that, and like Andrew Bynum becoming like a destroyer of worlds at the beginning of that, but then hurting his knee.
Yeah.
And then like 5 days later, we trade for Powell. It was like this up and down roller coaster. And then,
right.
you know, in the playoffs, I remember beating the Spurs. I remember, and yeah, those teams were, so 08 is, if 08's not number one, it's very high up there mm-hmm. for me, even though we didn't win the title. I think, but from beginning to end, I'm actually going to go with the 2000 team because it's easy. And for a large segment of our audience, they didn't experience this, but the Lakers, they signed Shaq in 96, in July of 96, and they lost that first year to Utah, and Utah was better than the Lakers were. And it was a weird year where like the top four seeds were very close in record. So like the Lakers playing Utah in the second round would be like the Lakers playing the Clippers in the second round this year. Mm-hmm. Like in really, really high end matchup. Lakers lost 4-1. And that was the year with Kobe's four air balls in game five, but he was a rookie, right? He's like 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal. Like this kid's emerging and they didn't make it, but that's fine. But the following year they got swept by Utah in the second round, I think, maybe the conference finals. And then they got swept by San Antonio the next year. And that was a super weird year, the 99 season, because it was abbreviated by the lockout. Del Harris got fired like 11 or 12 games into the season. We signed Dennis Rodman. Kurt Rambis was our head coach. It was just a strange year. But all of that is to say that by the time 2000 came around, we'd hired Phil over the course of the offseason. Yep. By the time 2000 came around, there was a lot of pressure on that team to get it done. And we had traded for Glenn Rice. I believe that was in 99 at the trade deadline, but we didn't, you know, go far with that. So by 2000, it was like, oh, like this is the year, this is the year. And we go through that year. They're really good. They go 67-15, I think. And we really improved on the defensive end, but just like the whole year was fun. Go through the first two rounds of the playoffs, you know, pretty unscathed. And then we go up 3-1 on Portland, and then we almost became that first like, oh crap, they blew a 3-1 lead.
Before it was cool.
Game seven, we're down by like 15 points to start the fourth quarter. And it was just in context with everything that had happened the previous years of like the, oh, they disappointed, they got swept, they fell apart. That's what happened in the previous two seasons, that they fell apart. And then, so them going down by 15 after Portland had come back to tie the series and going into the fourth quarter down by double digits like that, it was like, it was crushing, dude. It was like, oh, here we go again. They're like, they're falling apart, this shit again.
Yep.
And they go on this wild comeback. Portland gets all nervous and chokes, and it culminates in like, it's easy to watch that Bob now and know that that's probably like the most famous play of that era, wouldn't you say? Like in terms of Lakers plays?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's like when you think of Shaq and Kobe, that's like the first play that comes to most of our minds.
Mm-hmm.
What made it so sweet, and it's great that it survives outside of context now, but what made it so sweet was it was that finally overcoming the obstacle, like that finally getting there. They came back. They didn't
I swear to God,
apart.
Staples actually, together. Like the lighting went up. Like for some reason, it got brighter in Staples Center.
Yeah, like the whole place lit up, right? Like they illuminated and it exploded
right.
with that play. And it was just, it was greatness that wasn't always in sync. Even after that, these two great players just like lining up just mm-hmm. for one beautiful moment, and they finally overcome. And then in those days, the finals were kind of an afterthought in that the West was so much better. Like
it was just
whoever
like
won
an after party. Like it was an right. after party from the Western Conference. It was just like preparation for the parade, and then you got there.
That's right. That's right. And so they played the Pacers, but Kobe hurt his ankle. Jalen Rose hurt him, I think.
Let's take a break. I want to come back. This is a specific point. That this is what makes this season so special to me. It's funny, like, it's so easy to get kind of lost in your thoughts talking about these teams. We forgot that we were recording a podcast.
That's right. I think those are the best podcasts.
I'll throw this back at you. But what I remember specifically about the season was that's when we learned Kobe was that dude. So it was basically, you know, Shaq gets hurt. Lakers go to overtime. If they lose that game, I don't think the Lakers were ever going to lose to the Pacers, right? But if they if they lose that game, it's definitely one of those nervous moments, especially like you talk about, given their immediate history of how they performed in the postseason. Shaq fouls out. Kobe's playing on a bum ankle in Indiana. They go to overtime, and I remember my dad was just like, this is not going to end well. I remember specifically looking at my dad, you guys think I'm Mr. Doom and Gloom, but you guys, I got it from my dad. And he was just, oh, this is it. We're so screwed. There's no Shaq. Like, what are we going to do? Kobe's like 15 years old. What's going to go on? What's going to happen here? And then, you know, as history will show, the rest became history. Kobe carries him through that overtime. The Lakers win in Indiana, get that 3-1 lead, and then I believe went back and closed it out that first game, right? Phil didn't lose too many elimination games.
They did lose game five. That was when they were in the 2-3-2 format. So game five, I think the Lakers got blown out actually in game five because they won their first title together on the Lakers home court in Staples. And they won game six. Like, it was kind of an arm's distance win. I think it was a 7 or 8 point win where, like, it wasn't a blowout, but Lakers were in control for most of it. And then Kobe jumping into Shaq's arms and all that. And that game four performance, Kobe really jacked up his ankle in game two and missed game three.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, and that was before Kobe was considered a superstar. Like he was considered, he was an all-star by that point for sure.
Yeah.
But like Shaq going out, Shaq was the most dominant force in the NBA by a mile at that time. It would be something akin to LeBron getting hurt or Giannis getting hurt for their respective teams or fouling out, that is. And then Kobe is your number two guy is on a really bad wheel. Like if that wasn't the finals, Kobe would have been out for a couple of weeks because it was a really bad sprain.
Remember, Jalen Rose admitted later to doing that on purpose. Asshole.
Oh, I never heard that. Well, he deserved that 81.
That's why he got that 81.
Kobe was just making big shots down the stretch. I remember he had this putback on a Brian Shaw floater on a miss on one of those. And it was like that. He caught it midair and reversed it in. Mm-hmm. And it kind of like, I don't know if it put the game away. I don't remember if it put us up by four, but it was like we got this. I think we got this type of moments. And it was the game that I think cemented him as a superstar in the NBA. And so just the entire story of that 2000 season, when taken into context of what had happened the previous seasons and what it meant going forward with Kobe really cementing himself as a superstar, that makes that number one for me. And it's very close. There are lots of other teams, Lakers teams, that I really love.
Yeah, I kind of feel like in hindsight, you know, because the Lakers beat the Celtics in 2010, I think the year before that, the team that won the championship in 2009, I think is a little underrated at this point. That was such an incredible season just because, like, the thing about the Shaq and Kobe era was that they were supposed to win. Right. Mm-hmm. Like they were supposed, you had Shaq, who was the best player in the NBA, like you said, by a lot. Right. And then you had Kobe, who was like the second or third best player, depending on who you ask. By the time they were winning championships, right, it was like Duncan was there, and then you had Kobe there. Then every so often, you know, you'd have another, like Iverson popped up. I think right before that first championship in the three-peat, a lot of people were saying, you know, Iverson is the guy that, you know, the Lakers wish Kobe was and stuff like that. And then, you know, Kobe shut him out for an entire half and kind of reminded or sent a message like, yeah, I'm actually pretty good too. But once Kobe and Shaq kind of solidified themselves as the bona fide superstars that they were, it was, no, the Lakers, if they don't win, it's a disappointment. And the thing that I'll always kind of love about the Kobe Powell championships was that they, you know, they were one of the contenders, but I never considered them the favorite, like the outright favorite, because you had the three-peat Celtics who, you know, if you were just to judge them based on how they carry themselves right now, is maybe the greatest team ever assembled. you had LeBron kind of fortifying and solidifying himself as the best player in the NBA. You had Dwayne Wade was had won a championship, I believe, right before those championships, right? He beat Dallas. So you had, like, there was enough talent around the league to where the Lakers weren't necessarily the favorites in the way the three-peat Lakers were. And, you know, that year that they finally won one, that was an incredible series. Like, people don't remember, Courtney Lee missed that one layup.
Oh, game two, yeah.
Yeah, missed that one layup that would have lost the Lakers home court advantage. And he was wide open. Like, yeah. It wasn't something that the Lakers did that made that look difficult. It was that he just boofed it.
Yeah, yeah. That whole play, I was watching that develop. I'm like, no. we avoided that.
Exactly. And then you had, like, the Trevor Ariza steals and then the Derek Fisher. Like, the game that they won.
I'm sorry, can I jump in?
Yeah.
Can we appreciate, like, I just want to take a moment to appreciate Trevor Ariza.
Yes.
I think he's a role player from Laker, and because he wasn't here very long,
yeah.
He's one of my favorite Laker role players of all time. I Absolutely. Loved watching that dude play.
Who'd he murder? Was it Grant Hill? I think he murdered Grant
Hill. He got a couple of guys. I think you're right about Hill, though. Yeah.
And then he blocked Jerry Stackhouse on the baseline corner against Dallas. That was an incredible play. But in that Orlando series, you had Dwight Howard at the absolute peak of his powers. Like, we've never seen Dwight like that since, and he was pretty damn special. They were playing against a literally chemically enhanced Orlando Magic team, right? it was an incredible series, and you know, it features one of our favorite plays of all time, with the play where Kobe, I forget which one it was, but not the one that he was, he and Power talking about after the game, where he mm-hmm. famously talks about his hand, you know, the timing of it. But the play where he was kind of, it was like a semi-transition play, or maybe an actual transition play.
It was transition. Yeah. I know this whole sequence like the back of my head.
It's incredible. Like, it's one of the best passes anybody has ever thrown, ever.
It was like 35, because it went back to the play before on the defensive end, because Lakers were down.
They should not have won this game.
No, we were down 5, and Orlando had the ball with 37 seconds left.
Yeah.
How do you win that game, right? And Dwight Howard was at the free throw line shooting 2 free throws.
Well, that's how you win that game, right?
Yes. Or was that after? That might have been. No, it was.
I think a that defensive got it stop.
Yeah, it was in the middle of it. It was, I think, Rashard Lewis pull up jumper miss. Mm-hmm. Then Kobe makes the play you're talking about, where he pushes like 2-on-4, 2-on-5, and drives middle,
collapses
and,
like, the basket,
collapses and makes a spin move, and then that dump off pass he's gonna make to Shaq, and Powell is like trailing and gets the dunk. We're down 3, and then on that next possession, so not only like. Kobe pushing it like that got the Lakers a 2-for-1.
Yeah.
So we didn't have to like foul a ball handler. We just had to get a defensive stop. Mm-hmm. But there was a miscommunication between Kobe and Derek Fisher defensively on a Dwight Howard ball screen with Hito Turkoglu, I believe.
Yeah.
And so there was a miscommunication, and I believe it was Fish's rotation, and Kobe's like, oh shit. And he rotates over and tackles Dwight Howard so that he cannot get a dunk or an and one. Right.
Yeah.
And Dwight misses both free throws with the Lakers up 3.
Mm-hmm.
Lakers call timeout, down 3, 9 seconds left. And you know what's going to happen right there, right? Like it's going to be Kobe, the guy who takes the shot, right?
Yeah.
So Orlando doubles him in the backcourt. Lakers decide to take it out full court rather than advance the ball to the sideline or to half court. And so I'm thinking that Kobe's going to try to like dribble through this, right? Because it's a very Kobe thing to do. He just outlets it to Trevor Ariza up the sideline, cross courts it to Derek Fisher, and like 5'4" Jameer Nelson is like on his heels. Derek Fisher pulls up,
yeah,
just like. Just wet it,
so
right?
clean.
And, Yeah, and we go into over, and as soon as that happened, I was like, yeah, that's ball game right there.
Yep.
Kobe hit him on a kick out for a three that put the game away, and then you got that great gif of D-Fish, like, yep, backing up and that smile slowly coming on his face, like, we got this, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was another game four, right? Like, those game fours similar to the 2000 series. So I'm sorry, I went on a rant there, but that is those – that sequence of game four in 2009, the last 35 seconds are probably my favorite of Kobe's career, just because it was so, like, I don't think he registered a stat in the whole thing. He got the assist. He got the assist to Powell, but
and a foul.
Him, like, right, and a foul. Like, him tackling Dwight Howard to save a dunk and or an and
one. That ends the game.
That ends the game. And then just this simple, like, I've got so much gravity, but I'm going to trust my teammates. We've gotten here to this point. Just going to outlet up to Ariza. And we got a little bit of numbers. Gets the ball over to D Fish, bucket. Then the kick out to Fish on in OT. Just all of it. Like, we're too box score centric with how we evaluate the game. And even statistically, like, I don't know what his stats or his advanced numbers were in that. I do know that everything he did in that sequence helped the Lakers win the game.
Yeah, and it had to be perfect.
Like, it had to be. Yep, exactly.
It's like Stu says, right? You got to be perfect from here on out if you want to win it. And they were, you know, and they were. And that, so that I kind of feel like, because of what happened the next year, beating Boston the way that they did, that year prior has become a little underrated. But that's basically the entire purpose of why we're doing this bracket thing. It just gives us a reason to get lost in how blessed we've been as Laker fans and talk about some of our favorite teams. It'll force me to go back and do some research on the Showtime era and be able to talk about those teams a little bit more and what made them unique. And it gives me an opportunity to go back and watch one of my favorite videos of all time, where that Showtime era Lakers team outscored the Kings like 44-2 in the first quarter. I can't get enough of that as a clip that I can watch. But just overall, that's basically, you know, this is one of the things we're gonna have to come up with a few other ideas like this. We got a great email, asking us to get into some Lakers what ifs, and get into the ripple effects of some of the all time what ifs in franchise history. So we'll do that. And we'll see where else this whole stretch takes us. But we're going to get through this. We're going to get through it together. And I'm really looking forward to this. Like, just, Pete, how much fun was it just looking back on those three teams that we talked about? Three.
Yeah, that's it. Well, that's good. We've got some we've got some more talking to do. Exactly. And hell, we could get into any one of those teams even more. So,
absolutely. Yeah, we'll plan to.
Let's do it.
So that's going to be one of the things, like I said, that'll get us through this. For now, though, have a great rest of your day. Be safe out there. Please, for the love of goodness, please be safe and smart out there. Make somebody else's day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.